Listening Dog Media.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Rocket with Kieran Bracken, the rugby podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Welcome back to Rocket with me, your host, Kieran Bracken. Unfortunately, Nick Easter is coaching up in Newcastle, but very exciting time now. We will be discussing all things rugby for the Six Nations. And this week, my guest is the legend, the Lions, the Scotland fly half, Craig Chalmers.
Rocket with Kieran Bracken.
Thanks for coming on Rocket. I just want to. I just realised I did check up on Wikipedia with you. I didn't realise this, but you're not even the best rugby player in your family because your sister is your.
Don't you start as well? Everyone says that. It is true.
She got more caps for Scotland than you, did she?
Yeah, she got more caps, and she's actually dual international as well. She actually played hockey for Scotland as well. So, she jacked the hockey in after about two caps because it probably didn't get as much support as the rugby got at the time. And, she was a good player. She was always a bit of a tomboy. And, she was good at football. She's good. She's a plays a she can beat me at golf now as well. Thankfully, she lives in Australia, so I don't play very often. But,
When you were playing for Scotland, though, and you had a bit of a shocking game or whatever, was she on your back? Was she like, "Oh, come on, Craig, that was shit, that was rubbish"? Was she at you because she's an international herself?
No, it was you. She probably got capped about sort of mid to late 90s. So yeah, I had a few shockers before then. So, but yeah, no, she was great. She was good. She would give me some advice, and it was normally good advice as well. So I respected her opinion.
Listen, do you know what? There's so much to talk about. Before I talk about the Calcutta Cup once again, which seems quite weird after this really weird 2020, even stranger 2021, is. How's COVID affected you? I got COVID, by the way. I caught it from my eldest. And so, yeah, it was a bit weird. It didn't affect me too much, just a bit of a cough, a bit of a headache. I didn't really get long COVID, but my eldest, Charlie, struggled. He took a longer time to recover. You haven't had it, Eddie, or anyone in the family?
No, touch wood, I've not. You know, it's just obviously been, like everybody else, it's been frustrating how long it's gone on for. But obviously, you know, it's pretty serious, and I think a lot of people didn't take it seriously, still aren't taking it seriously. But thankfully, you know, the vaccine is getting rolled out. But one or two guys have had it, and Brian Redpath, you know, one of your old adversaries, he had it quite badly.
Wow!
He caught it at Cheltenham. He was at Cheltenham. I think that's when he got it, and he was real bad. He's got quite bad asthma. And he was suffering really badly, and I phoned him actually. He could hardly talk, to be fair.
Really?
But thankfully, yeah, he's fine now and back on the bike and running and doing stuff. So, I think it just affects different people differently. And
I've been out on a night with you, and you are made of stern stuff, all right. So I know that if you got it, I'm telling you now. You would fly. You would be absolutely fine.
You just don't know. I mean, I think it's one or two people have had it and they phoned me up and said, you know, I've got it, you know, and it takes a couple of days to set in. You know, next door neighbor had it two down and he was fine at the start and then it just hit him. And likewise, an old colleague of mine also had it 2 days later, even in the hospital. So, he wasn't in, you know, in the ICU, he was on oxygen, but I mean, still, you know, I think it's a lot to do with how well you look after yourself. And I think, you know, actually I've lost a lot of weight in lockdown. I think it's been the one good thing about COVID is, no dinners, obviously not earning much money out of dinners and hospitality and such like,
yeah.
But it might have saved my life. With the weight that I've lost, not drinking and eating functions and such like. So listen, yeah, I've lost a bit of weight. I feel hit, as fit as I did. I just about touched 12 stone the other day.
Shut up! You did
not 12? No. I just not 12 stone, but I just about saw 12 on the scales. I was 13.08 after a cycle, and
well, that's the same as me. I'm dead on 13 stone as well. I was 14 stone and I've got down.
I was 15. When I came back from New Zealand, the 217 Lions tour, I was 15 stone 8. That sort of gave me a bit of a shock and I started to lose a bit then. And then just got on the bike and started to use the bike a lot more and, yeah, just out for a quick spin here and there, and a few long spins on Sundays with a guy called Buster White. Buster White.
Yeah.
Backwards forward. So we go for a big spin on a Sunday normally. But yeah, it's a great way to exercise, and especially when you know, like ourselves, I've had a lot of knee damage over the years. Running's not the best thing for us, so getting the bike has been great. And you know, when the weather is good, it's fantastic. When it's not so good, it's not so great. But
no, absolutely. Yeah. But
no, we're surviving. We're surviving. You know, business is quite good. So
great.
No complaint.
This is really exciting week, isn't it? The opening of the Six Nations and the old rivalries come to the fore. And you know, there's lots of games that I know that you had in the early days. I know it was like black and white then, wasn't it? But it was such a different era when you played. I mean, the Calcutta Cup was just, I tell you what, it was something else. Before we talk about this game, I just want to get your memories of, the rivalry was just second to none, wasn't it? I mean, it was just phenomenal.
It was intense back in those days. And my first game against England, my second cap, was against England at Twickenham and it was 12-all draw. That was the last previous to the 38-all draw. That was the last time we got as close. And to be fair, I'm going to take that as a win because we scored only try that day and England had, I think, three penalties and a drop goal. So
yeah. Yeah,
in new scoring terms, we'd have won that game 13-12. so I'm going to take that. But 12-all game that year and it was two good teams at that point in time, early 90s. And the year after, obviously, we were back at Murrayfield and there was a famous Grand Slam game, which obviously we won. And then the year after, back at Twickenham, we were going for a triple crown, I think, that year at Twickenham. We lost that game, tight game again. There were many tries in these games. You know, even going to 95, where we played you for the Grand Slam decider in 95, and you were in the team at that point.
Yeah,
that there was no tries in that game that day.
No,
we'd won two chances, but drop goals, penalties. So there was a lack of tries in those games, but there were great games to be involved in. But I think I don't know what
it was with Will Carling and Brian Moore and you guys as well, but there was this extra feeling of hostility, wasn't it? Against
that came from 1990.
Yeah,
definitely. I think the abuse that the English boys got when they came to Scotland in 1990 when, you know, Margaret Thatcher was going through the poll tax stuff with the Scots, and you know, they just there was a resentment. There was a horrible, nasty, you know, feel in the air. Not from the players. You know, it was another game to us. You know, it was just, you know, England. It was a big. It is, you know, listen, you've all seen the advert for the Six Nations about who you want to, you know, who you want to beat or not to win or whatever. And you know, England at that point suffered, you know, they took that badly, and quite rightly so, because they were the favourites coming to Murrayfield in 90. And I think that probably was the making of them for that team, that generation, right through to 90. They won the Grand Slam in 91, 92, 95. I think we all captained three Grand Slams, I think, in the end.
But we got our vengeance on that. Was it the World Cup 91 where Gavin Hastings missed in front of the post?
I know. It was a nightmare. That was such a tight game as well. You know, we to get through the semi-final, and we had it in Murrayfield, which was, you know, brilliant for us. Yeah. And I mean, the atmosphere that day was amazing. It was an absolutely shite game. It was a terrible game. But we had the chance. We had that chance to, we were actually threatening the line to get a score a try, and Gav got pretty close. And I think, I don't know what happened, but Gav got a knock on the leg. It was virtually level with the right-hand post as you look at it, clock end at Murrayfield. And we just thought he'll just knock it over, and you know, 9-6, we've got about 5 minutes left, you know. And he missed it, and England got down the other end. And I think Rob Andrew had a fantastic kick in the corner, and good field position, and you know, Rob dropped the goal. I mean, I've got the photograph of somewhere in the bottom of a drawer somewhere of me diving in the air, trying to get my hands on the ball it was painful, but you know, it was, yeah, listen, it's sport, and it's unfortunately you remember the defeats like that more than you remember the victories, I think, sometimes.
What I find interesting though about, you know, there's this rivalry, and it's a strange week because, you know, the Autumn's Nations Cup was a bit strange. It was rubbish rugby to watch. You look at Scotland though, and you look at the talent that they've got individually now. They've had a, you know, very average World Cup, but then, you know, they've got signs. A couple of years ago, the 38-38 draw at Twickenham was just unbelievable. And I think one of the things is, you know, England on the other hand playing very boring rugby. Are very efficient in what they do. They're missing some key people, which might matter. But what's really interesting for this first game, I think, is the fact that COVID has hit and there's no fans, okay? And so if you look in football now, there's a more away wins than there are home wins for the first time in the history of the Premier League. Now, I don't know whether in reality the Twickenham crowd really help the England team like it would at Murrayfield, like it would for your team. But there's something tells me that there's actually, I think, a window of opportunity for Scotland to get England on the hop. They've got injuries in the front row. They can't train as a squad because of some of them isolating the coaches. They've only got a squad of 28 players to train. They haven't got two full sides. So it's all, and they've got new faces coming in. They've got some injuries. And then you look at Scotland and you think, okay, well, you know, we don't know what Scotland team is going to come, what the game plan's going to be. Is it going to be run everything like they've tried to do in the past, or is it going to be pragmatic? But you do have the talent. This is my opinion. I look at the odds, and the odds, I think, are just way off. You do have the talent to win this game, don't you?
No, we do. I think the crowds will have an effect. The empty stadiums do have an effect on the players. The biggest thing for me is, I think, with looking at this game, is maybe the Saracens players that are playing in England team that will be, they've played no rugby. You know, okay, not many of the players that are playing the Six Nations will have played over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, the Saracens players especially, the Owen Farrells, the Jamie Georges of this world, they've played very little rugby, and to go into an international match, which is we all know is a step up from club rugby, it is going to be tough. But I think Scotland, this is, you know, listen, it's always, we've not won it Twickenham since 1983, 38 years ago. A couple of years ago, we came back, and I thought we'd done it. I don't know how we got back from 31-7 down, but to get back and be leading 38-31 and to get it stone at the end there. But, you know, it's going to happen sometime. So, you know, why not this year? I think we've got some good players. I think the World Cup was really disappointing for us. We played some poor rugby. I think Gregor realised that he made some poor decisions. They were trying to play rugby, crazy fast rugby in rubbish conditions. You can't do that. You know, they're playing far more pragmatically in the Autumn Nations Cup. And I think you'll see that develop even more into the Six Nations. I think having Finn Russell back is a massive plus. You know, missed him.
What was your take on that, by the way? What was your take on the old Finn Russell saga?
Honestly, I think it was too much. And I think if Greg Laidlaw had been the captain, no disrespect to Hoggy, I think Hoggy's done a good job, but it was his sort of first sort of role as captain. If Greg Laidlaw had been there, I think he'd have taken Finn Russell aside and, you know, he'd get over a couple of pints of lager, you know. I mean, Jesus, you'd be getting dropped for that back in our day if you didn't drink a couple of pints of lager.
Yeah, okay. For not drinking, you get dropped.
For not going out, you get dropped. Yeah. But, you know, listen, I think it could be handled far better. We can't afford to lose any world-class players. And Finn is a world-class player. And I think he's matured. I was always worried about him going to France. I always thought maybe it wasn't the right move for him, but I think it's been a brilliant move for him. He's playing behind a pack that's very powerful and providing good ball, and he's got some great guys outside him that can get him over the gain line, and his kicking game is fantastic. He's probably got the best kicking game, in the world probably. Just his range of kicks is unbelievable, as we've seen over the last few years. So I think having him back is a huge buzz, and a huge buzz for the squad. I think our back row is excellent. I think our biggest problem at the moment is hookers. We've got two hookers out at the moment.
Yeah,
it looks like George Turner will start, who's a good player, really good player, and will knock anybody down. And I think number eight is a big issue for us, a big ball-carrying number eight. I'm not sure if they're going to go for Gary Graham, who's been playing excellent at Newcastle, or Nick Haining, who was in last year. He got in and played well. I think it's a real issue for us, number eight, a big ball-carrying number eight. Because Hamish Watson and Richie are great players.
The area of the game, I suppose, that is becoming more important these days, especially international rugby, is the scrum. And I think your line out is pretty good, but your scrum, you know, with Sutherland, you've got Peter de Villiers, coaching you. And there's something tells me that if you look at the England pack at the moment, missing, you know, Sinclair, Mako, a couple of players, Joe Launchbury, who's the ballast behind these players. Something tell me that I read an interview with Rory Sutherland saying that's an area that they're going to attack. Now, I think, if you look at the World Cup final, England against South Africa, that was one area that actually literally was their DNA of how they won. If you win the scrum, you get your penalties, you get field position, you know, psychologically it's huge. And I kind of think that if you look at the England squad and the way they've played, let's be honest, and I would like to get your opinion on the Ford Farrell and the style of rugby with England, but let's face it, if you don't have parity up front, then you're going to really struggle. And what England have done over the last, under Eddie Jones, over the last 4 years is they've dominated physically, right? They've just dominated you. They've played very average rugby, kicking everything, force you into mistake, almost like a Saracens type game plan. But this Scotland team, if you can get parity or start winning the scrum, unsettling them, getting field position, I kind of got this feeling that it could really go Scotland's way.
No, I totally agree with you. I think that, you know, England losing Sinclair and Marler as well, there's a bit of weakness there. And I think Rory Sutherland has been fantastic. You know, actually, not just his scrummaging, he's been good. His ball carrying has been excellent. And he's a real, you know, he's one of the real candidate for the Lions if it takes place. And Xander Fagerson as well, good, strong boy. And we've got, I think, I don't know who else I'll go with on the bench, but they've got a real depth in props now. So if we can get parity, I can't remember the last time. I don't think I was certainly not involved in any pack that I played behind that dominated England. We've had parity before, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But when we played against England, the role was massive. I mean, that team you had in 1985, the back row was huge. So
Tim Rodper, what was it? It was Tim Rodper, Dean Richards,
and Stephen Clark. Rodper, Ojo, and Clarke.
I mean, just massive, just massive.
Oh, yeah, it's horrible coming down my channel, Ben Clark.
Yeah, Martin Johnson, Martin Bayfield, 6'9", 6'10". I mean, horrible. Jason Leonard. Victor Abiru, Brian Moore. I mean, bloody hell, just power.
Massive. It was the biggest pack. It was big and horrible. It was, but we don't dominate teams really up front in that area. We look to try and get quick ball. If we can get quick ball and get in the front foot, because you know what it's like playing scrum half. It's so much easier to play when you're going forward off quick ball for line out, get over the gain line. You know. That's going to be interesting, but as well for Scotland, who they pick in the centre, because it's still a massive issue for us.
Yeah,
I really hope they go with this Cam Redpath, Baz's young kid.
Yeah, how's that happened? We've made him the player he is, Craig. I mean, he's played England 20.
He's coming with swooping and brushes giving him the chat, and he's coming. You know,
he's made a really good decision because let's be honest. Would Eddie Jones have picked him for England in the centres?
No, I think he's made a good decision. No, I don't think he would have. But I think I've got a feeling. I don't know. I've not got any inside knowledge. Yeah. But I think they might play him against England in this game. I'd play him probably Harris at 13. He's been solid, good defensively. Yeah. I still like to see Hugh Jones regain his form that he had 2 or 3 years ago. I think he's great going forward. It's just his defence that lets him down a little bit. I think our back three are, we've got Hoggy at fullback, obviously captain of the team, who can do some great things.
Yeah.
And Darcy Grahams, who's been a revelation since he's come in. You know, small, not very big, but Shane Williams type winger.
Yeah.
Quick, strong, elusive. And you've got the Jock Bock, Van der Merwer on the wing, with the option of Blair Kinghorn as well on the bench probably. So I think we've got real strength in our back line.
And really, can Brian Redpath, I mean, I know you'd like to see him start, but you know, that I tell you what, that's a tough debut, isn't it, against England, Calcutta Cup. But would you not worry about his size? You know, he's a guile player, isn't he? He's not a run over people player.
No, he's not, but he's physical. He's physical, and I don't know that much about him, but I think he's a good communicator as well. I think he went straight into that semi-final against Exeter last year and impressed.
Yeah.
And in that game for me, you know, he wasn't shying away from anything. He's not scared to attack. He's got a little bit of a break in him. He's got a great offload. You know, he's got long levers to get out. So I don't think he doesn't want to hold any fear, and he's a bit like Brosh. He looks tough.
How's he going to understand anyone though with his English accent? Who like, come on, boys? Do you think he'll get the right anthem when they sing the anthems? Oh shit! What's the word?
He'll fit in well then.
All the South Africans.
He won't be the only one. I'm not sure if he'll understand Finn very well, but. The Stirling lads, or him and Ali Price, the Stirling boys. But I think he'd be good for Finn. I think he'd be a good, a good working with Finn. 10-12 axis.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you, but just so that's Scotland, and I think you're right. You know, you have got some really good players. Whether they can gel as a team and come out with the Autumn Nations and rugby in the last year for me has been really disappointing. And if you had this England team and you think of the likes of Daly, you think of May, you think of Pace, you think of all of the opportunities. But England have gone, they've recessed into this idea of like kick tennis. And actually, we may criticise that and say, well, we want to see more rugby. We want to be inspired. But it's winning rugby. And I think the revelation about sort of making the contest at the breakdown a 50-50 decision means that people are very scared now of running anything. And actually, tactically, the thing to do is kick it. And it's not good for the game. It's boring. It's awful to watch.
you know, after the Autumn Nations Cup, it was dire. It was horrible to watch. The only team that were worth watching in that were France. And even the second team who should have beaten England at Twickenham that day.
Yeah.
They deserved to win that game. They, you know, there was two, I think there was a penalty and a knock-on that weren't given. But, you know, England have got great players in the back line, but they just have this seem, it's a bit of a sadness. They're actually better without the ball sometimes, that they're scared to play with it. But after that Nations Cup, you went into European stuff, and I saw some brilliant rugby in a 2 or 3 week period. Players threw off the shackles, and they were, you know, they're playing with a bit of freedom, ambition. You know, that's what you want to see. And I would, you know, listen, I'd love to see all teams, but all teams can't be the same.
Yeah.
They can't be the same. You know, if every team was the same, it'd be a pretty boring game to watch. So you've got different teams, you've got different strengths. And as someone was saying before, who would you rather have in your team, Finn Russell or Owen Farrell? Or you know, and somebody, I think it was Delali who said, Lawrence said, he said, well, you know, I'll have Finn's box of tricks or his video reel, and I'll have Owen Farrell's trophy cabinet, you know. So
it
boils down to, you know, sometimes pragmatic will override the flair. And how often, you know, percentage-wise, how often does it work? I think Finn's exuberance and his ambition and the way that Scotland are trying to play, because at the end of the day, you know, if it's going through Finn, that's how you're going to play. You're going to kick it. He kicked away a lot of ball back in the day when he first started to score, a lot of bad kicks, you know, bad touch kicks, bad chip kicks, bad gubber kicks. He's learned an awful lot. I think he's learned when to use them and why he's using them. Whereas I think at times he just kicked for the sake of it. I think now he's far cleverer, he's far more mature, and he's using it far, far better. And I think the pragmatic game plan that Scotland have got is going to be, you know, is going to come to the fore in the next 2 or 3 years. But just back in England, I just think if I was playing in the England back three, I'd be gutted, because you guys are winning a lot of good ball, you're dominating teams up front.
I got frustrated when I look at some of the Premiership rugby, but I did see a game of I saw Bristol play against Bath, and I've got a feeling that that's going to be the DNA over the next year or so, where teams are going to start trying to play expansive rugby. Hopefully, they'll ring fence the Premiership, because I think that gives you the freedom, because you know you don't have that hanging over you, you know, the relegation, but. Just being a fly half from yourself, I would like to get your opinion, you know, before we finish, just on the other nations. But the Ford-Farrell axis, you know, we had, you know, Ford at 10. He's a lovely playmaker, but you end up having two kickers, really, who are very good kickers who can control the game. And because you have those two, whilst Ford is maybe the flair player, Farrell the pragmatic player, but two very tactical kickers, you kind of get this sense that, because it's going through those two all of the time, it always ends up being, I mean, some of the kicks, I don't know whether you saw, were not only, they were aimless kicks. They were just like, we don't want the ball because we are in our third. So you have the ball and we'll just defend. So I kind of get frustrated watching them, and I've seen them play a different style of rugby, which they can do. And that for me is so frustrating.
No, they can do. And I think Owen can play that game in the front foot as well. I don't think he plays it maybe quite as well as George Ford at times. George is passing is very crisp. He gets flatter. He gets a bit flatter than Owen at times.
Yeah.
But Owen is a fly half. He's a fly half. I mean, but he's always been moved out to into the centre because he's more physical as well, obviously. And you know, people will target George Ford as a small 10 who doesn't not get the biggest tackle in the world. You're always going to go forward if you get down this channel and bring him into play. If you play Owen a fly half, you're not going to get that. You're going to get somebody that meets you head on head, you know, and maybe knocks you back. But then you've got the likes of Tuilagi, who's injured. He's a big miss for England, I think. A fully fit Tuilagi, but it doesn't seem to be fit nowadays. So, you know, how much more they'll get out of him is another issue.
Well, Odogwu is, if I have to say that, Odogwu, the centre for Wasps, he's
young, you know. So, you know, I think Slade's a good player. I think Slade on the front foot, he can hurt people. He's got great pace.
Yeah.
He's got good skills. But he needs to get the ball on the front foot and running at people.
Let's get your prediction of England-Scotland before we just do a quick review of the other game. So give me the score, England Jeez. Against Scotland.
I think it's going to be quite tight. I think it's going to be 23-21 to Scotland.
Oh, I love it. Okay,
it's going to be. I just got a feeling if we can get that parity up front, then I think you know Finn can work a bit of magic with that backline.
I'm going to predict a great start from Scotland. Okay, I'm going to predict Scotland winning at half time. All right. And then England are going to bore the shit out of you, right? And then Daly's going to kick three from the 10-yard from the halfway line. And we're just going to kick everything away, like kick tennis. It'll be a couple of mistakes and we'll win by 5 points. And everyone will go, what a load of shite that was. But we'll win. So there you go. So let's have a quick, just a quick 5 minutes on the other nations. You know, if you look at, so we're obviously very excited about France and what they can do, but they are missing a couple of players, you know, Entomac missing, but they've got other players, Penaud coming back, but they've got young players. They look exciting. You know, they did a great job in the Autumn Nations, Six Nations, World Cup coming around the corner. Sean Edwards is a great addition for them. Fabien Galt, you know, looks great with his glasses, his skiing glasses. There's something about the French team that you kind of go, do you know what? They've got it. They can win the World Cup. Yeah. They can win the Six Nations.
They can. I mean, when I first started playing for Scotland, France were an incredible team.
Yeah.
The likes of Sella and Blanco and Berbizier, Comber-Ribeiro. It wasn't just the backs that could play. The forwards could play as well. You know, Caban, Laurent Caban, you to play against him as well when he was at Queen's.
Abdel Benazir.
Great players, you know, And I think they're getting back to it. They're getting back to the way they used to play with that ambition. What do you call the scrum half? Dupont.
Oh, what a player.
He's an unbelievable player. And you've got, you know, you got...
The missing Nakatawa, who's injured, though, that's a bit of a problem for them.
That's a miss for them. But they've got... They showed with the players that they brought in for the England, Nations game, that they've got a bit of depth there. And I think that, I think Sean Edwards showed what a difference he made to these guys. I mean, they're obviously shit scared of him as well. look at him. He's a scary looking animal.
That's half the battle. Yeah. What about Wales, though? I mean, Wales, do you know what? Flattered to deceive. I mean, you know, what a sinking ship. The Wayne Pivac, he's, you know, Warren Gatland just done so well with that team, got the best out of them. And then he's just left them a dead rubber. I mean, I don't know whether it's...
Really, it reminds me of David Moyes at Man United.
Yeah.
Coming in after Alex
Ferguson. That is perfect.
It is, exactly. I feel sorry for Wayne Pivac. I think they've tried to change things a little bit, tried to play a bit more rugby, and the players are getting caught in between the two styles. It's the same players, virtually the same players. They've had one or two injuries, but it's virtually the same players. I'm not worried about Wales too much, obviously. I think Wales will come good. They've got good players. I think they've got good players. They've got a bit of depth there. They've got one or two injuries that they've had, and one or two players aren't maybe back to what they were. But it's a big year as well. And if this Lions tour is going to go ahead at some place, somewhere, if it does, then players are going to step up. And, you know, I'm sure Warren doesn't want to take too many Scots. So
I'm sure there's going to be more Scots, I'm sure. So let's just finish off. I mean, Italy are still developing and, you know, they've got a terrible record now in the Six Nations.
Yeah, they have. But I think Italy, they are still trying to play rugby. They show some great signs, you know, great tries, scoring tries in games, showing a bit of ambition. They've actually gone the other way. They used to be, when they came into the Six Nations or even before that, they were very, very strong up front.
Yeah.
Very, very strong up front. They would demolish us up front when we played in the scrums and stuff. Easy. Yeah. And they don't do that now. Maybe a little bit like Argentina used to be like that as well, but maybe not as much as it used to be. So yeah, they've got. I think they can still offer something, and I'd love to see Franco Smith, you know, get them sorted out and start getting a few victories, because they need to for the championships, they need to for themselves, because as long as they keep finishing last, then the questions will be asked whether, you know, someday I should come in.
So let's just finish off with Ireland before I finish off with Ireland. I want to just get a last question on the Lions. But Ireland, you know, with the World Cup, they've got some great players, legends in there, but there doesn't seem to be, you know, younger players like Johnny Sexton, Conor Murray, they're still there. They've got great players in the back row. I think the biggest signing for them at the moment is Paul O'Connell has come in as forwards coach. So that'll be really interesting. But and you've been here before, but I think the problem that they had was with Joe Smith, they had a very detailed plan of action. And I think with Andy Farrell, I think it's the better way to go is to be playing what you see. And that takes time for them to develop that. But the thing is, with Johnny Sexton, Conor Murray and these guys, you know, you never know what you're going to get. You never know whether they're going to dominate in a certain area or they're going to play a different style of rugby. They're progressing nicely, but I can see them. This is probably their preferred home and away games. They last won the Grand Slam in 18, and it's the same sort of home v France and England and away against the others. So this could be their moment to sort of shock us all.
Yeah, no, I think they're a good team. They've still got good players. I think they're Conor Murray and Sexton. They're still playing reasonably well. They're not at the level they used to be at.
No.
They're not playing as well as it used to be. And they don't have the young guys coming through. There's a guy, Byrne, who from Leinster, who's a good fly half, tall, same kind of build as Johnny, and who's coming through. But I think out wide, they've got some good players. The Kiwi winger, I can't remember his name, plays in the wing. The guy that's come in, the Kiwi guy, he's been good since he's come in.
Yeah, it's James Lowe, isn't it?
James Lowe, that's James Lowe is a great asset. He's a great one of these wingers that works off the ball, turns up at all parts of the field.
Yeah.
And they've got great forwards. You know, you've got great back row, they've got great second rows, and the front row is always strong. They've always got depth there. So I think they're gonna be tough to beat. They're always tough to beat. It just depends. Yeah. Just depends how they play it and how Sexton and the halfbacks play. Because I think they've reached a peak. I don't think they'll reach that again. They might do it in their game, but consistently, I'm not sure.
I do think it's a very open Six Nations, but on the background of it all, look, and you know, you've got the Lions coming up, and every game is going to be a trial for the Lions. And you were there, you know, I think you went to New Zealand, and what a great... I mean, I missed out on the 97, but ended up getting called out on the 97 Lions. And it was one of the best things I ever experienced. I didn't get a cap like you did, but there's something about it that's so special. But as a player, when you're in that position, you're playing for your country, and in the back of your mind, you know, the Farrells, the Jamie Georges, you know, the Ackies, the CJ Standers, there are all these players, you know, all new players, you know, even like Redpath, who's making his debut, somewhere along the line might say, do you know what, if I play well, I'm on the... So this is great. Now, firstly, you know, Australia now putting up the hand saying, look, well, why don't you come here? Which is, I think it's great to have another option. I quite like the idea is if you can't go there, why don't they come here? Because in a way, I think if we can have crowds in the UK, it would be fantastic for Scotland, for England, for Ireland, for Wales, to have a Lions tour at home because of COVID. It just might show what we can do in this strange world. Now, a lot of people would say, well, the Lions is about touring. The Lions is all about the fans. The Lions about 30,000 people going away, you know, from their families, getting pissed, doing all sorts of stupid stuff. And that's the magic of it. But I'm not sure. I kind of feel that in a way, if we can't do that because it's too hard to do it, rather than go to Australia, bring them here. You know, we're all the Scots, the English and the Welsh and everyone, we'll be singing along together for the first time, you know, on home soil. And I think it would be something really special. And I think it would make a lot of money. I think if we can have sort of like the TV rights, and I think South Africa will make a lot more money. And in a way, but South Africa might say no, because they might say, too much an advantage for the Lions.
Yeah, maybe, but I think ideally we want it in South Africa, but that's just not going to happen, I don't think. I really don't think that's going to happen.
No.
Not with the variant over there. And, you know, you got to remember, a lot of people that go on Lions tours are people who can afford it, and they're older as well. Yeah. You don't want to get COVID over in South Africa, I don't think, in the next few months. But if they can have it, you know, don't take it to Australia. Don't go to Australia. No. Have it here. Have it here in August, you know, late July, August, if possible. And, you know, I think the money will be there. And it shouldn't be about money. I know all the old guys are saying, you know, it's all about touring. And, well, it is. But rugby has changed an awful lot since I went on a Lions tour in 1989 to Australia. I mean, I was 20 years old. I'll be honest with you. I was only worried about getting capped for Scotland. I just realised after the second game of the Five Nations back in that there was an actual tour to Australia. So, you know, I missed out in 1993. I broke my arm against England in the last game of the Five Nations. So I missed that one. And then I didn't get picked and I was a standby for 1997, but then tore my hamstring. So, you know, listen, a Lions tour is special, very, very special, and it creates a bond that can never be broken, especially winning tours like 97, the one that you were on, and 89, the one that I was on. You know, those guys, English, Welsh, Irish, and Scots, you know, there is that sort of bond and that band of brothers sort of mentality that, you know, went on those 2 months. We were there for 2 months in Australia. You know, it was fantastic. It was great fun. We trained hard. We played hard off the field. Yeah, we just had a brilliant time. And it's, you know, something that will never be erased from our memories. You know, it's you know, so to experience that, you know, I just, you know, I'm, you know, wishing all the Scottish guys, because I want as many Scots on that tour as possible to experience what I've experienced. And you know what it's like. It's magnificent, and you know, days, you know, you only get one or two opportunities, and sometimes it's about timing. And as you said before, some like young Cam Redpath coming into the Scottish team, if he gets his chance, it's about taking it. It's about timing, you know. And you know, there's a whole lot of guys out there, 60, 70, 80, 90 guys probably think they can go. Yeah. So you know. Brilliant. Let's see what happens. But listen, if they can't have it in South Africa, delay it for a year or have it over here. Yeah. Murrayfield, Dublin, Cardiff, and Twickenham. 4 test series, 1 or 2 warm-up games against maybe the Babas, some, I don't know. You can. Yeah. There's ways of doing it.
And I agree. I think it'd be awesome. But listen, I've taken up loads of your time, and I love the fact that at the start of it, your wife came on first. So I thought I'd interview her about you or about rugby, but you've been very entertaining. I've got this special app on my computer. It can interpret accents, so I understood everything you said, my man.
You made subtitles.
I'll have a five a bet with you that England win at the weekend, and it goes exactly the way I said. Scotland come out firing, winning at half time. You're all excited with your beer, and England are going to win with the most boring rugby that no one will care about in years to come.
Yeah, it's not going to be the same, obviously, with cows not being there and us not being there. But
no, exactly. You
know, it's still happening, and yeah, it's going to be fantastic. It's the best time of the year.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for your time on Rocket, and much appreciated, mate. Cheers, buddy. Thanks for listening, Rocket. And of course, thanks to our special guest in Craig Chalmers. Next week, we will be discussing and reviewing all the Six Nations and all what happened on the pitch. See you there.